The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Genghis Cunt to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
No punches pulled there. And I'm your other host, Mark. Happy New Year. Logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this first week of 2022 is amazing familiarity, also known as the argument from omniscience.
Yeah, so amazing familiarity is when someone makes an argument based on information they can't possibly really know. As you say, it's also known as the argument from omniscience. So an omniscient narrator in fiction is one who can tell you not only what's going on with the main character, but what's going on with all the other characters and what they're all thinking and all of that kind of stuff. Fairly common fictional thing to do. Not so common for people in reality.
To actually behave as though that's them. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, because most people don't know what everyone else is thinking and what they're doing all the time and have detailed knowledge of everything going back through history.
Yeah.
So if someone claims that they do in making their argument in some way, then they are committing this fantasy. Yeah. It's a reasonably common one to do and fairly easy to slip into accidentally, because we all kind of infer from what people say and how people behave what they're thinking and why they're doing things, but really we don't know.
Yes, exactly. And particularly if you're talking about a people, a race, a country that you have no experience of, or a time sometime prior to your own existence, and then talk about it as though people mentioned it to you, you know, because you're one of their familiars. Yeah. So there's the amazing familiar in the familiarity. You go, you seem to be amazingly familiar with those people. What told you that, or those facts about those people?
Yeah. So our first example from Trump comes from a time around one of his impeachments.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually not sure which one. Which one this?
Yeah,
I think it might have been the first impeachment. Right. And he was on a podcast, a radio show, and he said this:
"They're using impeachment for reasons that it was never intended. It's a. I just watched a little bit of the hearing. It's a joke. What's going on? Everyone is just. They can't even believe it. They've politicized this to a level that it was never meant to be by the founders.
Okay." Because I was only saying to them the other day, this is not what they meant. Yeah.
This thing of what the founders intended by something that they wrote, or what they meant, what they would have wanted, what they would
intended,
think if they could see the America
they
of today.
See now. Yeah,
is a really common thing, especially among Supreme Court justices, for example.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, as I'm sure any listeners to the Opening Arguments podcast will know, you've got textualists who will look at the Constitution, look at the laws and say, okay, well, the words say this, so that's how we'll interpret it. And you've got originalists who say, well, this is what the framers meant when they wrote that.
Right. Yeah. Which is a similar argument for interpreting the Bible or any religious text. So, what they actually intended when applying their writings to a society 2,000 years into the future is this. So, I guess the counter to that is, well, aren't you just, it's almost an appeal to authority as well, isn't it? And it's a, saying, well, these people are in charge. We should defer to their knowledge about this stuff, the founders or the Gospels, the apostles. And also you should defer to my authority because I'm familiar with what they
absolutely
what they think.
Amazingly familiar.
Yeah.
So Trump's idea that the founders wouldn't have wanted and never intended for someone who committed the kinds of crimes that he'd committed
to be impeached.
I don't know that we can really take that with anything more than a very large pinch of salt.
Yeah, particularly when the state of Russia didn't exist. Then, possibly, yes. No, not certainly not in the form that would
involve. Not in the form it does today.
Yeah.
Not. No.
No. Quite.
So, our second example from Trump is in response to a chant from the crowd who, one of his rallies, who started saying that they loved him.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That's really nice. You know, in the history of politics, nobody's ever heard that expression before. It's true. Look, Ronald Reagan, we like Ronald Reagan, right? But nobody ever said, we love you, we love you. Nobody's ever heard it before. Nobody's ever heard it before. It's an expression, true. You know, they were covering it the other night. They're looking back, oh, they want to find it so badly. They want to find somebody so badly. But it's never been said before, to the best of anyone's knowledge. Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
No one has ever said, I love you, to a politician.
Ever. Ever. No.
So, not, I mean, JFK, to know that.
Nobody. No.
You would have to have quite a lot of information about all of the things that have ever been said to politicians.
Yeah, at your fingertips. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. That, and that's the kind of... Yeah, the kind of, that would involve a lot of reading, I would imagine, because many of the people that could tell you that were probably not, you know, you're not going to pay attention to if you're Trump, because they're experts.
It wouldn't need a great deal of reading to find out that it's not in any way true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, some reading.
You don't, and I don't have to go back very far.
Right. Yeah. Did they say it about Obama?
For example... Yeah. Just as a kind of quick example, how about this one?
We love you, Barack!
Love you, first of all, I love you back! And, there
you go. And that is the first section, the first few seconds of a compilation of clips of people yelling, we love you, and him saying, I love you back.
Brilliant.
Which happened many, many times during his presidency.
And that's isn't that... Now, remind me again, wasn't he immediately prior... to Trump. So it's not, we're not talking founding fathers here. We don't even have to go back as far as Ronald Reagan for that. No, we could just go back a few weeks before.
For Trump to say, oh, you know, the press, they've been looking for other people who said I love you to. They can't find any.
Yeah, which
press? Because it's never happened
before. They're looking in the wrong places, yeah, because it's never happened before. And the thing is, the drooling masses all go, yeah, we believe you. That's the, yeah, thank you, thank you. That's so nice. And he's just, oh, I hate him.
So, yeah, when you hear people say this has never happened, it's a kind of absolutist thing. If they say people always think this or this, no one has ever thought this before or done this before, they're probably using this fallacy. Mm. Or in some cases they are.
They're undoubtedly wrong, whatever argument they're using. Yeah,
a lot of stuff's happened.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. So,
yes.
Reasonable chance that something that they think hasn't ever happened has probably happened somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. In our third example, we have a short clip from the... how long was it? His speech, Kevin McCarthy's speech on the House floor.
Eight hours, but
I can't remember. It was really
long. Yeah, it was record breaking, wasn't it? It was.
Yeah, attempting to filibuster basically the vote, which then
passed about
happened
5 hours later,
and happened when all of the news organisations were awake again.
Yeah.
Instead of passing in the middle of the night, if he hadn't done any talking at all.
Yeah, there you go.
So one of the things he said during that period, in one of his more coherent moments, was this.
Nobody elected Joe Biden to be FDR.
Now, he was actually quoting another politician in saying that. and they are both wrong.
Right.
And also both assuming why people voted for Biden.
Yeah.
They don't know why people voted for Biden, and they certainly don't know why everyone voted for him. So you can't say nobody voted for him to be FDR, to do the things like FDR did, bringing in things like the New Deal and all of the kind of, you know, growth that happened post-Depression era. And in fact, immediately after he said that, AOC said, "I did." And then and someone else across the room went, "Me too."
Which made me immediately think of Life of Brian. "I did." Nobody voted for. "I did." "We are all individuals. I'm not." Brilliant.
So that didn't take long to debunk.
No, that's right. As two of the people who did just were in the room. So good, isn't it?
So finally, in this section, we have Kayleigh McEnany when she was quite a new press secretary for Trump. And she was on Chris Cuomo's show, and he asked her a reasonably simple question.
Kayleigh McEnany, do you believe this president has ever lied to the American people?
No. I don't believe the president has lied. I believe the fake news media. Do you believe the fake news media has lied? Do you believe the fake news media has lied?
Interview's over, Kayleigh. Please, if you can't admit that this president has lied to the American people, you will not have credibility with the audience. You've got a long way to go, Kayleigh.
So, yeah, she said, "No, I don't believe the president has lied to the American people at all."
There you go.
So, there's quite a lot of things he said that you would have to be familiar with.
Yeah.
And not only that, you'd have to be familiar with whether they were lies or not. So you'd have to have done some research into some of them, at least. I mean, you could just look at the reporting that's been done on the 5,000 or so lies he'd told up to that point.
The jars full of... whatever they were, gobstoppers, were they? Gumballs that somebody collected on his show. You could just ring those people up.
Look at that. You could look at some of the primary sources they cited to back up the fact that they were definitely masses of lies.
Just look at all the things that he said and actually whether they happened.
There were things that he said which were directly contradictory of other things he said.
Would count, certainly.
But in the absence of that, claiming that he had never lied without knowing everything that he had said to the American people and whether it was a lie or not is obviously not fair. To be fair to Kayleigh, she did say, "I don't believe he has lied." So technically, I don't think she's probably committing the fallacy. Because she's expressing her opinion rather than saying she's not using a fact that he has lied to back up or make an argument.
She's not using that the omniscient author position to just quickly scan all the things that he's made up and said no, he's not lied. So what she's doing is plausible deniability, isn't it? So
arguably.
He could point out, if pressed, he said, "Oh, I'm only told you that I believe that."
I don't believe he committed a lie, told any lies, basically because I'm uninformed or stupid. I don't believe that. I haven't looked into it, so therefore I am allowed to take on faith the fact that he's never lied. That's where she's going with it.
Or she's on the payroll.
Yeah, I'm paid to believe that he didn't.
Yeah.
He hasn't lied. Yeah, so if you think you might be in danger of committing this fallacy, you saying "I think" or "I believe" rather than stating something as a fact is a good way to get around that possibility.
It's kind of cheating, but
a little bit disingenuous.
Maybe. It's like it reminds me of the meme that went out about Boris Johnson is on Andrew Marr's show, and Andrew Marr says, "What's the fate of all the lies you've told? What's your favourite lie?" And Boris says, "I don't tell lies." And Andrew Marr goes, "Yeah, that's my one too."
And Now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Speaking of whom, in April 2020, Boris Johnson shared with us his amazing familiarity with how he knows how hard it is for everyone in lockdown.
I know how hard and how stressful it has been to give up, even temporarily, those ancient and basic freedoms. Not seeing friends, not seeing loved ones, working from home, managing the kids, worrying about your job and your firm. I understand your impatience. I share your anxiety. And so I know it is tough, but I refuse to throw away all the effort and the sacrifice of the British people and to risk a second major outbreak and huge loss of life and the overwhelming of the NHS.
So the end bit, I just left that on because it's good to look at that in retrospect and see that's exactly what happened. So this is at the time when in April people were arguing, allegedly, that we should come out of lockdown. The people of Britain, not just people in the cabinet or people in the Tory party, which they were. And so he's appealing to his familiarity with the way that we're all worrying about that, which is quite amazing familiarity given his privileged millionaire prime ministerial position, which I suspect doesn't include actually having to worry about looking after the kids or his firm, perhaps worrying about his job. Yeah, I grant him that. And also amazing that he's familiar with all of that and yet had no familiarity with what went on December the 18th when he hosted a Christmas party in his flat in Downing Street during the self-same lockdown, nor any familiarity with his cabinet secretary doing exactly the same in his office the day before. And despite having not lifted lockdown in April 2020, he went on to have no familiarity with the events in the Garden of Number 10 on May 2020 and continues apparently to have none. Even now, there's evidence of two parties, including one with a bring a bottle invitation. So, yeah, so when he does, he and the one that he does, which annoys me the most, is I know that the British people, you know, collectively, the entirety of the British people, he knows full well what they're thinking. And he does it in Prime Minister's question time. Whenever he's asked something awkward, he will revert to Tory party policy, which he then dresses up as this is the will of the British people. I know the British people will want you to be asking questions about this. Well, and in the last episode where we discussed that he told off the reporter for asking the wrong questions, he invoked his knowledge of the British people to justify telling the reporter off for asking the wrong questions in that growly kind of voice. So my second example to, you know, in the interest of balance, Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, made a speech this January setting out why it would be quite patriotic to vote Labour after all, where he revealed his amazing familiarity with what makes the entirety of the world jealous.
Think of all that the British have to be proud of. The rule of law. The integrity of British justice has always been the envy of the world. And it's always been a big part in our economic success. A good reason to do business in Britain is that you know a contract will be respected.
So, and it's kind of ironic that the Tory party's Liz Truss shares his amazing familiarity with what made the world, the entirety of the world, the whole of the world, jealous. She said the same thing in 2016 when she was Secretary of State for Justice.
I'm immensely proud to be given the responsibility to uphold the rule of law, to make sure that our legal system continues to be the envy of the world.
And this insight into the world's envy about the rule of law and faith in contractual agreements is ironic because Liz Truss, who's now the Foreign Minister and now in charge of the ongoing Brexit negotiations with the EU, is considering tearing up the 24-year-old contract of the Northern Ireland Protocol Agreement over ensuring an open border between Ireland and Northern Ireland in order to facilitate smooth border crossings for goods from the UK's territory, Northern Ireland, and the EU of Ireland.
Was Keir talking, like, in the abstract or about the past when he talked about how...
No, he's talking about the...
Because, I mean, it's just, like, last year or the year before that Boris completely steamrolled the contract that we had.
Yeah.
And yeah. And just said, yeah, fuck yeah. That. No, I'm not honouring that at all.
Do that. No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Why? So what is, who is proud in Britain about that? We're not the envy. That's the other thing that I guess is the opposite of that, is when newspapers or whoever, the left-wing commentators, not Keir Starmer, say we are actually the joke of the world. You know, well, how do you know that? You've got the entirety of the world. There are some bits of the world, I'm sure, have no interest whatsoever in the British Isles, and if only we were one of them, that would be great. It would be a lot less stressful, I'm sure. Yeah. So anyway, Keir Starmer, in his list of things that make Britain proud, he spoke again in January, and also former UKIP MP William Cash, now Tory, spoke in 2015. They're amazingly familiar with other global jealousies.
A creative heritage that's the envy of the world.
Only UKIP is standing up to developers to fight for what makes Britain the envy of the world. Our beautiful villages, towns, countryside and landscape.
So you see, having this omniscient view is a bit, you would think, being, you know, someone who's omnipresent and all-seeing would make you sort of infallible as to what is the envy of the world, what the rest of the world is envious of about Britain. But there's like a massive list. It's not one thing, obviously. It's the, you know, the rule of law.
But that's the shittiest list. The towns. Who gives a fuck about British towns?
I know. Towns
what
and
the
landscape.
Shit? I mean,
and villages.
Maybe villages and cities. You know, we've got, London's pretty cool, and there are some very nice villages in the Cotswolds and places like that. But towns?
Yeah.
There isn't a single town in England that is enviable at all. They're all shit.
No. Because, and not least because of their foaming jealousy of cities and villages.
And landscape. There's some nice bits, but have they not seen Italy?
Exactly. Exactly. The fields. You know, the pining for the fields.
There's plenty of really nice-looking
bits of
Australia, the world.
Really quite nice. Yeah, which, and you know, that's that I think it's also contained in people describing the Manchester ship canals as the Venice of the North, which isn't reciprocated by Venice. When you go to Venice, it doesn't say we are the Manchester of the South. Doesn't. It's not. So it's, you know, there's that. There's something in there about, oh, yeah, you know, well, this is, well, even Brighton says it's kind of London by the sea. So this is what the people, all of London think that Brighton is London on sea. Well, they don't. Have you ever been there? That's right. No, it's not. Part of the difficulty of Brighton is you can't go in one direction because there's the sea. You know, whereas in London, you can't go south
of the river after a particular point in the.
No, that is true.
If you're in a cab,
not via not via any kind of public transportation system. Yeah, and not only is that shit list, but it continues. In January 2020, over 60 agricultural groups, including the National Farmers Union, the Royal Society of Protection of Cruelty to Animals, and the Soil Association, declared their familiarity with planetary green-eyedness, saying Brexit can be a catalyst for UK farming to be the envy of the world, where they wrote a letter to the Prime Minister about UK food standards, calling for them to be protected after Brexit. Coincidentally, the same standards currently underwritten by the EU, which are actually at the heart of the trading arguments across the UK-EU, Northern Ireland border. It could be wrong, it could be right, it could be logically shied, it could be spiteful, could be insightful, look for fallacies in the wild. It could be wrong, it could be right, it could be logically shied, it could be spiteful, could be insightful, look for fallacies in the wild.
in the wild. It could be wrong, it could be right, it could be logically shite. It could be spiteful, could be insightful. Look for fallacies in the wild. It could be wrong, it could be right, it could be logically shite. It could be spiteful, could be insightful. Look for fallacies in the wild.
There we go, Mika there with the Grace Kelly challenge on TikTok.
I haven't got a fucking clue what that was.
Well, yeah. Well, now you've got to go look at it. I think I went down this rabbit hole because I was looking at Ryan Reynolds' interviews with Judy Comer for Free Guy, and then it led me off to the Mika Grace Kelly challenge because Ryan Reynolds does one.
Okay.
And which is brilliant. You think, bloody hell, he can sing. And then all of a sudden, who pops up but Anchorman himself, Will Ferrell,
okay,
turns up to sing the high bits, and it's just terrific. And then that leads you down an insanely infinite group of people all doing it badly or quite well. Yeah. And then it, which and makes you think, oh, yeah, whatever happened to Mika? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those of us who are hip, down with the kids. Yeah.
Well, in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to take a look at the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective. And this week, our first example comes from Misery, the Rob Reiner adaptation, I believe, of the Stephen King book. And in this scene, Annie Wilkes has found out that Paul Sheldon, her favourite author, has killed off her favourite character and is a bit pissed off and wants to get him to burn the book that he's written.
Can't you see it's what God wants? You're so brilliant, I would think you'd certainly be able to see that. We're put on this earth to help people, Paul. Like I'm trying to help you. Please. Help me help you.
So, can't you see that this is what God wants?
Yeah. Well, it's the appeal to the founding fathers again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, this is a very common thing that people who are trying to justify their interpretation of the Bible or of some other religious text say, you know, even if it's not written down in the text, you know, this isn't the thing that was talked about at the time or was specifically written down, but I know this is what God wants. This is what they meant, and this is what, you know, God wants us to do.
Because the problem is it carries no weight at all if you're not a member of that system, if you're not inside that system and a believer in that particular God or powerful head of the something or other. If you simply don't believe in God, it will make no difference.
Yeah.
And so therefore they just sound like crazy people. Because you can point out to them, you say, well, how can you possibly know that? Oh, well, I have faith. So if they're calling in the Cayley argument, which is, well, I believe that this is, well, you can go on believing that. It doesn't make it any truer because belief isn't knowledge.
Yeah, see, my other example on this topic of knowing what God wanted was from Shadowlands.
Right, right.
Which is obviously a biopic of C.S. Lewis, who was, a Christian. Yep. And he gave a speech in the film where he said, you know, what if God wants us to suffer? You know, people say, why does God let suffering happen?
Yeah.
Maybe he wants us to suffer. And he says, I think maybe God wants us to kind of be able to love and be loved, but also suffering brings out certain things in the human condition and stuff. But he very much puts it all in terms of what he thinks, what he believes.
Mm.
Therefore, isn't really committing this fallacy. Whereas Annie Wilkes is like, God wants this to happen.
She's just going full out for that thing. Yeah, there's no. C.S. Lewis. He wrote a series of
Mere Christianity
and the Screwtape Letters and all those kind of things where he they're almost Socratic tales where he has a teacher and a pupil and he's trying to explain, but he always put, even when he is being the omniscient author as well, he puts some distance between himself and talking about what God wants. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like Annie Wilson, just goes, God wants you to do this. And actually, in a way, that in filmmaking terms, when people do that, that's a shortcut for they are crazy.
Yeah.
there is no difference between their view and the view that they hold. They exhibit amazing familiarity with what deities are thinking.
Yeah, I find there's an amazing correlation between people saying what God wants and what those people think is a good thing.
Yeah. And what they want. Yeah. Annie Wilson is particularly a good one because it's what she wants.
Yeah. So our second example in this section is from Elementary, the New York-based Sherlock adaptation. This is actually reasonably early on in the first season, and Joan Watson is convinced that Sherlock's dad is going to come and meet them for dinner, but Sherlock is less convinced.
As I've already told you, your concern is unwarranted because he has absolutely no intention of showing up tonight.
How could you possibly know that?
Because he is a serial absentee, a pathological maker, a breaker of promises.
So Sherlock says his father has absolutely no intention of showing up to dinner. And while he is basing this on some evidence,
yeah,
that his dad is a serial maker and breaker of promises and that he, you know, regularly does this kind of thing. And also he's Sherlock.
Got some form when it comes to making these assertions.
And he does turn out to be correct in this instance.
Oh, right. Oh, that's a shame. I wanted to turn up and thwart him.
Yeah, he doesn't, in fact, know necessarily what his father intends to do. Sherlock is a serial user of this fallacy, essentially, because what he will often do is get a set of pieces of evidence and then say that he knows what has happened or what the resulting cause of something was, or motive for someone doing something or person who did it, when in fact he doesn't know. He doesn't have all of the information. He does. He has some information which leads him towards a particular conclusion, and he, although he claims to use deductive reasoning, he actually uses inductive reasoning and bases everything on probability rather than familiarity with all the information.
And he goes further than, say, Poirot or Columbo even, who kind of, when they gather everyone in the drawing room, or the equivalent in downtown Manhattan, or wherever Columbo operated.
L.A. Columbo
and
was.
There you go. And says, this is what happened, and this is what they did. They kind of tend to stick to the events as they unfolded, whereas Sherlock goes straight for knowing what people were thinking and what they intended to do all along. Yeah, he kind of does an extra leap.
Yeah, and in fact, in this episode, the crime that he's solving basically is a body has been found in the wreckage of a plane, because they believe at the beginning that this person was on the plane when it crashed. But actually the body, Sherlock believes, was placed in the cargo hold because the person caught someone putting sand in the fuel tank so that the plane would crash, and then so they didn't get kind of caught for it, they bashed the guy over the head and put his body in the cargo hold. And then having suggested this as what probably happened, he accelerates the truth and says, so now we know what the motive is for this. So he accelerates his own truth and at the same time kind of assumes amazing familiarity. He assumes what the person was intending and why they did what he assumes they did.
So once you've accelerated that truth and got to that conclusion only from the truth that you just made up, then to use that as a basis for knowing stuff.
I love Sherlock, but he does make a lot of assumptions.
Yeah.
It's just that he has a very good hit rate. That's the only reason he's any good at all.
Exactly. He has good. Well, the ones where he's successful, those are the ones that Watson writes down.
Yeah, that's
true.
All the
other ones where it's gone horribly wrong is going, it never gets finished. So he's just going, oh, no, I'm not gonna write that one down. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So before we move on to fake news this week, it's time for another Patreon poll. And the reason for this one is because we've reached a Patreon goal. So that's awesome. Thank you very much to all the people
who
give us money to do this.
It does.
It's kind of crazy,
every time that people pay for it. But lovely.
Yeah. You enjoy it's brilliant that they do. And part of the fact that they do means we have to occasionally do stuff for them.
Thanks for that. Yeah. Difficult things that we don't want to
do. Since we reached this Patreon goal, we are doing a thing called On Both Sides, which means we're going to look at all of the logical fallacies that are used to argue.
When you say all, that's a bold statement.
That's fair. We are going to research and find lots of logical fallacies that are used on both sides of a particular argument.
We will, of course, say they are all...
We'll claim they're all of them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you guys, or more accurately, the patrons, get to vote on which controversial topic, I guess, we choose to look at. And at the moment, we're open to suggestions.
I guess by definition, it's a controversial topic because there are...
I mean, there has to be some controversy to it, doesn't there?
Yes, exactly. Otherwise...
Is there a topic that isn't controversial these days? Is there one that people actually accept the truth of
that people don't
large
agree?
Enough numbers?
That might be it.
Yeah.
That might be the one.
So, I'm thinking things maybe like flat earth, gun control, immigration, vaccination versus anti-vaccination, those kinds of things. So, please... give us some ideas of things you would like to hear us
becoming president again.
look at the arguments for on both sides, the bad arguments for on both sides. We're not going to really be talking about the kind of the good arguments. We're going to be focusing very much on the fallacious arguments and the bad reasoning on both sides, both the side that we agree with and the side that are clearly wrong. So give us some ideas, and at some point in the next couple of weeks, we'll put a poll up on the Patreon page, and patrons will get to vote on which topic they would like us to discuss. Then there'll be a bit of a delay when we go while we go away and actually research them and
work
look
that
into
out
it before we actually do that.
Yeah, and kind of run around screaming, going, "Oh, thanks,
that one really?
Exactly. Yeah." Yeah, might we do several of these? Would it be worth doing them in an order? So if there's kind of like, you know, proportional representation, do we have first and the second?
Our next Patreon goal is to do another one.
Yeah. okay.
So, you never know. If enough people enjoy it and want to increase their pledges or encourage more people to become patrons, then we may do a second one. So, let's get this one out of the way first.
Let's see if everything drops off.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game. I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You see, I know for certain that when Euclid gathered his first class of mathematicians together, they predicted that the scoring in this game could not get more exciting.
Sounds reasonable to me. Yeah. So
it's amazing. Amazingly reasonable.
So the theme for this week's set of quotes is awful things Trump said about women.
Have we already got three?
Women in general rather than specific women in most cases, but not always. But also these were from before he was president, in some cases before. So this is just like a short history of some of Trump's misogyny. Just the highlights, really. Haven't got time for everything.
Okay.
Statement number one.
Righto.
Women have one of the great acts of all time. The smart ones act very feminine and needy, but inside they're real killers. The person who came up with the expression the weaker sex was either very naive or had to be kidding. I've seen women manipulate men with just a twitch of their eye or perhaps another body part.
It was quite poetic up to that point. And then, yeah, or perhaps another body part. Oh, dear. Right. Okay. You know, I mean, it's not good, but then he just completely lets himself down. Yeah.
Statement
okay.
number two.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Psychologists will tell you that some women want to be treated with respect, others differently. I tell friends who treat their wives magnificently, get treated like crap in return, be rougher and you'll see a different relationship. Unfortunately, with people in general, you get more with vinegar than honey.
Okay. He's obviously not seen Monsters, Inc.
Uh-huh.
See, you know, laughter would always win out.
Yep.
Over fear.
Or Winnie the Pooh. Honey.
Or Winnie... Yeah. Yeah, you see, yeah, you might not get stung as much, but yeah, yeah.
And okay. Statement number three. Right. Mm-hmm. I said to my friend, a very rich, very successful guy, I said, why are you with your wife? You know, he had a lot of money. He could have got a really attractive wife, but she was like a 4 at best, very flat chested. If she had lost 40 pounds, maybe a 5, but she seemed like a nice person. He didn't have an answer.
God, I mean, what kind of scale is he using? 20, 10, 5? Why are you... okay, very flat-chested. If she lost 40 pounds, she'd disappear altogether. Okay. But she seemed like a nice person. He didn't have an answer. Okay. Yeah, well, I think the... See, I don't know whether to see that he didn't have an answer is either very Trumpian or very Jim, as is, or perhaps another body part. So I'm torn now. Okay, be rougher and vinegar with honey. Vinegar. Okay, on. So, see, they're all perfectly formed insofar as they've all got a punchline, which is unusual with Trump. So these must be early ones. Okay, eyes. Is it body part? Okay, I think number 3 is the one that you made up.
You think I said that about a woman?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very rich, very successful guy. Yeah. Yeah, I think you said that.
Okay.
No, I think you've made that one up. You put that into Trump's mouth, which is not a nice image.
So, if the other two, which are you more convinced by?
I think, notwithstanding the possible Jim punchline, I think the number one, the women have greatest acts of all time.
Okay. Now, I will say, I don't have audio clips for any of these because they are...
Thank God!
...from... transcripts, or well, one is from a book and one is from a transcript of an interview.
Right.
So,
because they were done before sound was recorded, because he's that old. Yeah.
So you think number one is real?
Yeah.
And number one, is real. It is It is from his book, Trump: The Art of the Comeback, from 1997.
Right. Okay. Does he have any artistic, artful comebacks? Not really.
Don't think so.
He's not Churchill, is he?
I think it's the comeback as in, like, if you are bankrupt and then you can come back from that. Right.
Oh, I
don't think it's like a witty
reply
witty to someone
it's
insulting
not,
you.
Woman,
no.
Madam, you're ugly. Sir, you're drunk. No. Yes, but in the morning I will be sober.
Not like that.
Not a witty comeback like that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
So, yeah, well, he wrote that down in a book that he knew people would probably read.
Well,
deliberately. He didn't.
Or
he read it. No. He said it to someone who wrote it down.
Right. And it would have been... It would have been... Well, I hesitate to use the word fine. Fine.
I mean, would it?
It would have been...
Would it, though?
No. But it's much, much worse.
Yeah. The last
much,
bit makes
much
it worse. Yeah.
Much,
it does.
Worse.
It does kind of ring with, you know, blood coming out of her eyes, out of her whatever, for... one of the debates, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and it's a bit like it's a bit nudge nudge, you know, without being self aware and that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, it's, that's just awful, isn't it? So what? When was that? What year?
1997.
Really? Oh God, I was going to go like 1983 or something.
No.
God, he's such a old fashioned misogynist, isn't he? Not one of the modern ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a proper old fashioned misogynist. Oh my.
So, statement number two, you also think is right.
Yeah, the vinegar and honey. Yeah.
And
yeah,
number two is real.
Yeah. No.
That is from an interview he did with Nancy Collins for ABC in 1994. With Marla, he and Marla were interviewed, and right. And like while she was there, he was talking about how shitly saying, you should treat your woman.
Treat your woman, because so, cause, yes, because what he's implying there, what he's insinuating in her presence is, I treat you magnificently, and got or I treated you magnificently, probably more likely, got treated like crap in return. So therefore, I treated you like shit.
Yeah.
Because I get more from that than
being
nice to you. Yeah. Well, obviously it didn't work because he got divorced. So psychologists will tell you that some women want to be treated with respect, others differently.
Will they
tell you that?
I mean, not like good psychologists.
No. I think all psychologists tell you that everybody
wants to be treated with respect.
Yeah.
Even if some people don't deserve it. Which means that you're correct. Number three was completely made up.
Very good.
Although a couple of the phrases in there, like she's a four at best and very flat chested and things, are things he has said about specific women.
Oh no!
Yeah,
I thought. Yeah, see, I said to my friend, a very rich, successful guy, "Why are you with your wife?" Might be as far as
no, that was the bit I made up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Should have known better. Yeah. Oh my God!
So that means you are now on 42 out of 81.
Well, hey.
which is again over 50%. So you are maintaining.
Oh, look at that.
It's
mad.
Score.
Euclid was right.
Yes, it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called A Year of QAnon Failures is Not a Logical Fallacy. Because it's 2022. So it's time to look back over the past year. And the thing we're going to look back on...
the Great Awakening, the storm.
Yeah, the promised
where
storm.
Where everyone went, where we all went as one and all as all.
Yeah, so there is a podcast called Welcome to Hell World, which is about Q,
right.
Basically. And their kind of Twitter handle, Poker and Politics, or at Poker Politics, posted on Christmas Day a thread of all of the stuff that Q, or some of the stuff at least, not even all of it, that QAnon kind of acolytes claimed was going to happen during 2021 that didn't come true. And it was a great thread. And I'll link it in the show notes.
That's
and it was very it just funny. Made me think, well, we should have a look at some of the things. Because some of them
I didn't
know about, because I kind of pay attention a bit to Q and... Or you know, Q hasn't posted since what, December 8th, 2020.
No.
But his followers still seem to be there, and think things.
Well, other people who definitely aren't Q, never were, have been posting stuff.
Ron Watkins.
Who is, and what's interesting in this thread is that Poker and Politics, these guys. Pick up on the stuff that we did when we were reading the book, which is actually there's just a lot of infighting going on.
Yeah,
there's a lot of you know, it's the gourd versus the sandal,
absolutely,
kind of stuff, isn't it?
Schisms are plenty.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes, exactly. And you think just like all good, just like every other religion,
it's a cult. Let's call it, you know.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So just like all cults, there are people who will. Say, well, yeah, but you're not interpreting this very open to interpretation thing correctly. What I believe it means is what it really means, using the amazing familiarity have with whatever.
I know what Q meant.
Yeah, and there's a huge amount of amazing familiarity that happens in QAnons, as we talked about through every chapter of the book that we looked at. There are people who are looking at the cryptic bullshit that Q posted and saying, well, it means this. This is what he meant when he posted it. And again, several of them put different things. They can't definitely both be right. Realistically, probably none of them are right, because probably Q didn't really mean anything. He was just posting it to make people say stuff.
A bit of a LARP. Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or make people think that he knew something more than they did.
Yeah. A lot of it was, it was deliberately open to interpretation so that the people could spend their time interpreting it and not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it focus contains on other stuff. All the kind of plausible deniability and all that stuff as well.
Yeah.
Whilst being, people just go, oh, yeah, that happened. That thing you just said, that vague thing, it happened. And then they would just go, well, yeah.
It happened if you interpret it in a specific way and only with hindsight.
But
more often, the stuff they specifically say is definitely going to happen doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's what this thread is really
about.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the problem. Yeah. And also the source of much amusement. Yeah.
So, yeah, in January, Praying Medic, who was one of the authors of one of the chapters in the book, he was one of the many people who was claiming that Pence would overturn the election, basically. Pence would just declare Trump president and say that the electors in the various states which were disputed were not valid, which didn't happen. In case you weren't paying attention,
there was a kind of big gathering of people that were keen to see what he said.
And
he said, nothing of the sort.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that wasn't real. And
apparently nothing can stop him.
Nothing can stop him. And even if
nothing did,
like, even if he didn't do that, the Constitution, according to a guy called Anonymous Patriot Q, the Constitution was just going to automatically somehow make Trump president. The argument, I believe, at the time was it would all happen on March the 4th. I can't remember how the maths worked out, why that was.
Something to do with that was the anniversary of when the a corporation.
Yeah, that's right, because there hasn't been a real president since the 1800s or something. So so this was going to be the real inauguration, March 4th. But yeah,
as clutching at straws.
January, they were claiming that not only was Pence going to declare Trump president, which obviously didn't happen, but then after that, it was all going to go to the Supreme Court. They would deal with it, and that went through into February as well. The Supreme Court would decide that the electors from Michigan and Georgia and Wisconsin weren't valid, and then they would just hand the presidency to Trump.
Yeah.
March 4th came and went. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
At that point, a few Q people started to go, oh, this doesn't seem like it's happening. And started to kind of splinter off.
Somebody earlier on had said, stop worrying about that. Awakened Outlaw, who uses the outlaw Josie Wales as his profile picture. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's Clint Eastwood. He's just saying, just let the people who are working out that stuff, just work it out. Don't hassle them about things not turning up in the schedule. That's, it's the equivalent of the Lord moves in mysterious ways.
Stick to the plan is the kind of standard Q thing. Yeah. Is there is this overarching narrative that we don't understand, we're not part of. It's all under control. And there was a huge number of people who were absolutely convinced that Trump losing, Biden being inaugurated, and all of that stuff was part of Trump's plan somehow to stay president. So after March 4th came and went was the one that I didn't know anything about, I hadn't heard anything about, which was the idea that for some reason on the 11th of March, which was Biden's first primetime address to the nation, that was somehow going to coincide with some event that made Biden go full dementia and then be 25th Amendmented out of office. Right. I don't know how that would lead to Trump getting back in, because the Democrats had definitely won by that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, so even if that had happened, which obviously it didn't, Kamala Harris would have become president. So
exactly, yeah.
I don't know what they were going for with that one.
No, no. And in fact, that one gets turned up later on, doesn't it? That's another conspiracy theory, that it was all to get...
Oh, that Kamala... Yeah, yeah. Kamala ending up as president was another theory about the deep state were all, working on that. And then we get April. In April, everything goes fucking insane. Because March 4th didn't happen. Yeah. And now they're just, like, looking around for stuff to think is not real, which is okay. And it gets really weird. I didn't know about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
One of the conspiracy theories somehow, and I still don't really get this, even though I'm looking right at it, is that somehow George Floyd didn't have legs. There was people taking screenshots of the video of George Floyd, first of all, being killed, but also then being kind of lifted onto a gurney and put into an ambulance, and saying they don't look like legs. He's got like something covering where his legs would be. Look closer. And the people, other people are going, no, he's definitely got legs. And like, what are people getting out of that?
Are they saying he's not real? I don't know. It's not him. He didn't get killed.
I mean, that doesn't seem to be the argument they're making. It's just like he doesn't have legs. I don't know. I honestly have no clue what this is about. It's so weird.
Yeah. And there's another shot of somebody. Oh, it must have been the site where he was killed, where people have been putting flowers. And in the background, there's a shot of a gas station, and there are two prices on there, one for unleaded fuel and one below it for coffee for 99 cents. So it's clearly not fuel, because fuel is $1.89. Coffee. Yeah. And the people are going, well, it can't be real because diesel doesn't cost 99 cents. You're quite right.
Yeah.
Coffee does. Diesel doesn't. So they're just going, well, you see, it's all been faked. It's not real. It didn't happen. Cops aren't culpable, because diesel doesn't cost 99 cents.
Yeah, and George Floyd doesn't have legs.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And then one of the QAnons claimed that Gwen Stefani is not Gwen Stefani anymore. She has been replaced by a clone. In a kind of Paul McCartney is dead kind of way.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, comparing pictures of Gwen Stefani from before and after the replacement.
Right.
Presumably these people haven't ever heard of, you know, rich people having plastic surgery.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying Gwen Stefani's had plastic surgery.
Or a makeover. Yeah. Or just changing the...
Or looking different in different lighting or an angle, or, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just being a bit older and no longer being in that band. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, okay. Not sure how that relates to anything at all.
No.
And then Prince Philip died.
Yeah. Well, that unleashed all madness. I remember at the time that there were coincidences about him driving or something, or dogs or something. But you see, his title, the Duke of Edinburgh, will be inherited by the Earl of Wessex. Who is that?
Is it Edward the Earl of Wessex?
Oh, okay.
He is one Prince of Edward,
So he'll become Duke. And he's currently an Earl. And on the same day, the rapper Earl Simmons,
DMX,
died.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it a coincidence?
I don't think so. Because, no, it isn't.
Because two people, one of whom was like 99, died.
Oh, yeah. That's right, because he died on the 9th of whenever that was. Was that May? April, 9th of April, age 99. Which, of course, if you put the 9 and the 9 and the 9 together, and then flip them upside down,
yeah. Then you've got 666.
To make 666, then you've got 666. No conclusion to be drawn from that. It's just, you know, and there it is.
Yeah.
Did it get normal at any point during the year?
Well, in May, Lynn Wood and Mike Lindell came along, so no.
No. Yeah.
And here's where they were starting to directly contradict each other. Mike Lindell was saying, we've got the voting machines, we've got all the proof, it's definitely fraud, the election was stolen from Trump. Meanwhile, Lynn Wood is saying it wasn't stolen. There was an attempt to steal the election. Trump set it up. Trump knew it was happening, let it happen so that all of these people can be arrested. None of those people have since been arrested.
No, nor have they found any evidence.
No.
Funnily enough. So both of them were wrong, even though they were arguing with each other.
And
that's right. Wasn't Fauci going to be the first arrest? Because they kept saying in the book, The Great Awakening, there will be mass arrests.
There was going to be loads of mass arrests.
All those are people. Yeah, all the people that we disagree with and don't like and feel a bit aggrieved because we're not them, all of those people are going to get arrested.
Well, one of Q's first posts was claiming that Hillary was either already arrested or was about to be arrested back in 2017. So, they've been wrong every single time they've claimed any of that was going to happen.
Exactly. And they haven't even had the insight to use hindsight. They haven't had the foresight to use hindsight and just put a post out once somebody has been arrested and then say, there you are, you see, it's coming to pass.
All the people
who have
been arrested are Republicans. That's the thing. Most of the worst
one's called an inconvenient truth, isn't it?
Most of the high-profile arrests that have happened over the last year have been Trump's cabinet.
That's true, Or people involved in electoral fraud. Yeah, who have been Republicans. Yes.
So much of the next few months was taken up with the Arizona audit the cyber ninjas.
And
the claims that was definitely going to bear fruit, and the claims of what was it, like bamboo that they were finding in the fibers of the paper, which proved somehow that the paper had come from China, which proved that China was interfering in the election or something like that.
As well as Hugo Chavez.
The ballots hadn't been folded somehow or had been folded differently.
All of that. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Lots of bullshit.
Yeah. It's like, you know that song, The Court of King Caractacus? It's kind of like that, isn't it? If you read out the whole of the list of findings, well, as we will talk about later, the list of findings from Cyber Ninjas, you could just set it to music and get Danny Kaye to sing it, and it would, you know, it would hit the charts in the 50s.
So, the Arizona audit lasted until September. And then they came out and said, there was actually... Well, they made various claims, but none of it amounted to actual fraud at all. And what they found was more votes for Biden.
That's right, Which Biden won it several times over, didn't he? Yes, exactly.
At which point Ron Watkins spoke up and said that basically that wasn't the real report. And there was going to be more... That would come out, and all that was coming out at the moment was kind of selective leaking that made it look like there was nothing there.
Right.
So
also gets Ron Watkins at the top of the pile so that people go, oh, Ron, nice. Good thinking. If only that Q guy was still around. That's right. We all know it was Ron Watkins. And I think Ron Watkins is just ruin the day when he kind of revealed himself to be, you know, the scary guy in the disused roller coaster. They pulled the mask off his face and they're going, "Oh, it was you all the time." So yeah, and then nobody believes a word. And he should have just kept the mask on,
yeah,
you know, and dashed around at night with a cape. And people would have gone, "Well, yeah, there he is.
Yeah, yeah. Dude. Once the mystery's gone, nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit. And he's just as, he's being just as arch and, you know, tapping the side of his nose, going, "Yeah, you see, wait." So, and nobody believes him. He's just he's another QAnon now.
Yeah.
You know, nobody. And it, oh, he's so furious about that.
So and then October was mostly Mike Lindell claiming that he was definitely gonna get the Supreme Court to take the case. To be honest, he was saying that through a lot of summer, but the Supreme Court wasn't in session until October. So, and I don't think anyone told him till after the summer.
Yeah.
So well, at the point where the Supreme Court came back, he was like, "Yep, we'll definitely by Thanksgiving, Trump will be back in the Oval Office." That didn't happen.
I see. Actually, one of them back in August, Tommy Robinson got involved. Tommy Robinson, who's
British,
whatever his Yaxley Lennon. Yeah. We shouldn't gratify his lust for being an ordinary person. We should just always refer to him by his double-barreled name, Yaxley Lennon, was saying that, so if this isn't a fallacy, I don't know what is, that if the shot of some event could be any festival in the summer. It says, "Alabama, hanging on every word Trump says, the crowd, the energy, no way this guy lost."
Mm.
Because of the crowd, because of the energy, it was the same watching Duran Duran in the summer at the festival I went to in the Isle of Wight. There was a crowd, you know. There was not really any energy, and I drew the conclusion: there's no way this band was ever successful. And unlike Yaxley Lennon, I was right, and it was appalling. But they were, dreadful.
Yeah. so there was a bit more numerology in August, in October rather. Sorry, the tenth.
Was that another key date?
This was when the storm was going to happen. Yeah, the storm has been Harold Camping levels of kind of repeated and repeated and repeated. They've come up with different dates when it's going to happen. Depending on any given amateur mathematician understanding any random Q post. I expect you could find... If there had been anything anyone could have described as the storm, you could definitely have found someone who claimed it was going to happen on that day. The fact that it's never happened makes it harder for them to claim victory.
Because they're all sort of in agreement what the storm will consist of.
Yeah. At the very least, mass arrests. Yeah.
Yeah. And Trump re-crowned, you know, put back on the throne kind of stuff. That would seem to be essential to the storm coming. And and I like in the comment on the tweet, it says, Martin Geddes, who was tweeting about this, came up with another deadline. Because that man lives only for deadlines to fail. Yeah. And someone was really sure that something was bound to happen at some point or other, isn't it? Yeah. It's going to do this.
Yeah.
And there's no group more prepared. Take heart. It will happen at some point. Just keep believing.
Uh-huh.
Just have... Keep the faith. Yeah.
So, 10th of October came and went. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
And then...
And then nobody's kind of reaching around for another one yet.
I bet there's something.
I want to see a kind of a commensurate dropping off of membership of QAnon. Somewhere there's you know, the somebody who's keeping a graph of the subscriptions coming in. Just going, I've noticed a bit of a drop off every time somebody posts a date, and it comes and goes. Oh God, didn't we talk about that? Wasn't there one where JFK Jr.
Was the Dallas one.
Going to,
that's interestingly not mentioned in this thread, but the whole Dallas.
That
thing
was another
where they said,
date
this
where
was going
people
to be,
turned up.
JFK Jr. would be back in Dallas in Dealey Plaza. And
or some people even said, "I know that he's not coming, but it doesn't matter because the storm is coming." And, well, if it doesn't matter to you that these dates come and go, then there will be no commensurate drop off in level of membership. You know, that's the scary thing, isn't it? How many of these have got to fail for people to just go, yeah, you know what, he's not coming back.
Yeah, I mean,
back.
For some of them, there isn't a number. There isn't an amount that they can be wrong that will make them convinced that they're wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's like that sketch. There's a Peter Cook sketch. There's Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, and various people have done revivals of it. They're all sitting on top of the mountain, and they're waiting for the end of the world, and there will be a mighty wind, and then we'll know. So it's basically the storm will coming, and Rowan Atkinson in one iteration of the sketch was saying, "Will this wind be so mighty as to lay low the mountains of the earth?" And Peter Cook goes, "No." and then nothing happens. They sit there and nothing happens, and they go, "Oh, all right, same time tomorrow then." And then they descend the mountain only to do it again tomorrow. Yeah. And you get the feeling that they've done this every day, waiting for this wind that will be so mighty to lay low the mountains of the earth. Nothing happens, never happens, doesn't divert them from their faith that it will.
So towards the end now of the thread, in November, this was when they talked about the plan for the deep state to install Kamala Harris. And it was when Biden went in for his colonoscopy. Now, we heard around this time that when Trump had gone in for a colonoscopy in Walter Reed, he had done it like awake and without any anaesthetic because he refused to give up presidential power to Pence, even briefly.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Presumably in fear that Pence would go, "Yeah, you are not suitable to be president. I'm not giving it back." The conspiracy at this time when Biden was going in for a colonoscopy was because he had anesthesia like a normal human, and briefly Kamala Harris was given, for the first time, a female was given presidential power.
Wow.
The conspiracy at that point was, he's not going to wake up. They're just going to keep Kamala as president. Again, which it would have been more easy to just get her, voted in as president.
And it's not like she's a Republican.
Yeah.
So what's the...
No, this was issue? Like the deep state. We're going to do it. Okay. This was a negative thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
She'll be even worse or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. And because the deep state are that all powerful, all knowing, amazing familiarity, all knowing organization that can do anything they like. Uh-huh. But they couldn't elect the first female president.
No.
They had to wait for Biden's, they had in their diary, in their key diary of world events, Biden's colonoscopy appointment.
They can only achieve things through what appears to be just things randomly happening.
That's what they want you to think, you see, but there's nothing more powerful than somebody having a camera shoved up their ass. See, that's a key date. If only Martin Geddes thought about it more carefully, he would just peruse the anatomical diaries of the rich and famous, and it'd be forget about making stuff up and basing it on letters and numbers. Just go look at famous people's diaries for their intimate appointments. Just go, you see, that's when we should do it. That's when the storm's coming. Well, sometimes it can feel like that when you have a colonoscopy. Yeah.
I will put a link to the thread on the show notes, and check out Welcome to Hell World podcast. I've listened to a few episodes. It's quite good stuff. The commentary on Q. And
there's some nice points that they make at the end, which is, you know, just the kind of, whilst they rip the piss out of this stuff, they're kind of providing a service for the clinically insane by asking, you know, what you're being lied to again and again. You know, it's not like it's the same kind of lies that religion tells you. You know, there's not even the promise of, if you don't follow this, you'll end up in hell for all eternity. That doesn't exist. So there's no need to believe these lies.
Yeah. Look at these things. If you believed them and they didn't come true, why are you still believing them, basically?
Yeah.
So
it all becomes about the cultishness of it all, you know. And if you watch the 4 hours in the Capitol, have you seen that documentary on BBC? It might be on BBC.com. Look out for that. It's great. Lots of footage of all the phones and then the various people, and they're saying, "Yes, these are my people. I found my people." And then we stormed the Capitol with them. And, you know, it hasn't changed the way they think about it, that the fact they inflicted death upon people. It's just, why would you want to belong to an organisation that does that without having a gun held to your head to make you do it? But there we go. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Among the latest people to have their phone records subpoenaed by the January 6th committee is pillow huckster and dollar store Cliff Clavin, Mike Lindell. Like most cowardly right-wingers who know they probably broke the law, Lindell has sued to keep his records private, and the reason his lawsuit cites is that enforcing the subpoena would violate his rights to, quote, freedom of religion, speech, press, political expression, and to associate with others to advance their shared beliefs. Now, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I'm pretty sure a couple of those aren't rights as such, and I'm very sure they aren't violated by requiring Verizon to show the committee who he called and when. And I don't know where the fuck freedom of religion comes into any of it, or for that matter, freedom of the press, since Lindell is a pillow salesman and a nutter, not a reporter.
Brilliant. A year ago last week, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, appalled at the events of January 6th, declared on the Senate floor, "All I can say is, count me out. Enough is enough." Fast forward a year and Biden recalls those same events in an address and calls them out for what they were, denouncing the lies spread by Trump and his acolytes fomenting violence in seeking to overturn the election in his favour. And Graham, ever mindful of the right not doing irony, tweeted, "What brazen politicization of January 6th by President Biden? What? Duh." As if a violent and deadly insurrection that involved an angry mob storming the seat of government intending to kill Mike Pence in support of recrowning the losing former leader of another political party wasn't itself the, and I mean the, politicization of January 6th. You know, the day when the Senate ratifies the votes for the newly elected president. What the fuck? Helpfully, those that do get irony took to Graham's small blue bird feed to ask such things as, "Is the idea here that the riot itself was apolitical?" And point out that attempted coups are political, although one Michael Harriet nodded sagely in agreement, adding, "Joe Biden should be ashamed of politicising the political rally in the headquarters of American politics that devolved into political violence by interrupting politicians carrying out the political process of choosing the country's political leader. Shame on him." Yep, he's sure our kind of people. Michael Harriet, that is, not Lindsey Graham.
Remember a couple of years ago when Matt Gaetz told that story about his adopted adult son, and for a while everyone was like, "Even if he hasn't done anything wrong as such, this is pretty fucking weird." Well, it's Madison Cawthorn's turn. Hitler fan and fiction novel lover Cawthorn has recently announced that he and his wife of less than a year are splitting up, and an old video surfaced of him telling the Daily Caller how they got together, and it's super fucking weird. I'll let him tell it.
So me and a bunch of my friends, we went to we got to go over to very close to Russia. We went to Sweden and Norway, and we had just an incredible vacation. It was great. I was in a lot of pain the whole time, but it was wonderful. But then we got on a boat and went into St. Petersburg in Russia. And, you know, we just decided to take $100 each and go into a casino and see how it went. And, you know, I ended up meeting an American there who was a captain in the Army and who was originally from Miami. And so we hit it off, created a really great relationship, and stayed in contact for about a year and a half. Until later, I was down in Miami for work, and he texted me and said, "Hey, would you like to come compete in a CrossFit competition?" And so I said, "Well, Todd, I'm in a wheelchair. I obviously can't do CrossFit." And he said, "Well, just do the pull-up section." I was like, "Okay, sounds good." And so I show up. But anyways, it all was a sham. It was a fake CrossFit competition. He just wanted me to put me in the same room with the girl who is eventually going to become my fiance. And so we did, and her and I hit it off, and it's been a magical relationship ever since.
Who among us can honestly say we haven't been tricked into meeting a woman by being invited to a fake CrossFit competition by an American soldier we met in a Russian casino?
Happens all the time. So many times, I can't even count them.
An illegal Russian casino, presumably, since the nearest legal casino to St. Petersburg is 960 miles away. Quite a weird holiday excursion as well when you're vacationing in Sweden, since the only ferry service from Stockholm to St. Petersburg sails once per week and takes 38 and a half hours to get there. Other than that, totally normal story, and I'm sure that's exactly how it happened.
Yep, yep. And he said it unhesitatingly. Began the story.
Right into it.
You know, right into it. Didn't, no running up to it at all. Yep. Okay, folks, listening at home, please adopt the tiny violin playing stance. And I believe the tune of choice for adding accompaniment to the downfall of idiots is Hearts and Flowers. You know, the one that goes, to indicate how sad we all feel really deep down under the guffaws and belly laughs. Why? Because those ace detectives of electoral fraud, cyber ninjas, are shutting up shop and closing down for good. Ever the brave-faced spokesman Rod Thompson bullishly said on behalf of cyber ninjas, $2 million debt from the Arizona audit and endless legal and character attacks on the company by those who oppose the audit make it untenable moving forward. Of course, it's nothing to do with their shoddy practices, partisan stance, CEO tweeting conspiracy shite, not finding anything of note, having no experience in the field, and Maricopa officials concluding that out of any findings they did find, 76 of their 77 claims were false or misleading. Oh, and nothing to do, of course, either with a judge in Maricopa County holding the company in contempt and ordering it to pay $50,000 per day in sanctions for failing to provide records related to the so-called audit to the Arizona Republic newspaper. No, 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 nothing to do with that. The decision to shut down was made well before the judge's ruling, Thompson said, adding under his breath, "So, like a true electoral professional."
As Hans Gruber so wisely says to Theo in Die Hard, Christmas is a time of miracles. And just before Christmas, Trump showed just how true that is by being the sane, responsible one in a conversation with another human. Admittedly, the other human was Candace Owens, so the bar could barely be lower. But honestly, I'm impressed that a bar even exists that is low enough for Trump to clear. Owens was doing her usual sanity-baiting shtick, suggesting vaccines are not only unhelpful but actively dangerous, and that more people died of COVID in 2021 than in 2020. Okay, Trump didn't point out that for a good chunk of 2020 it hadn't had time to spread everywhere, but he did say that vaccines work, and that most of the people who are dying are the ones who refuse to take vaccines. Yeah, he didn't acknowledge that most of those people are anti-vaxxers because of him, but come on, miracles aren't that powerful.
We all know how Trump pretty much governed by Fox News. He loved appearing on the show and bleating on about the sad state of modern America, like the unsavory, racist, misogynist uncle no one likes to be stuck next to over Thanksgiving and Christmas. And Fox News soon figured out that they could alter policy by talking about things Trump had no idea about. So that's everything then. When they could see from where they were broadcasting from across the lawn that he was watching. Turns out, in a Washington Post report, that it was worse than that, and possibly actually worse than Nixon taping everything. Apparently, Trump used to dial Fox News' Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs into Oval Office staff meetings. Indeed, so close was the relationship that the committee investigating the January 6th riot revealed that Laura Ingraham, Brian Kilmeade and Hannity all texted Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows as the president's supporters stormed the Capitol. "Mark, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home," Ingraham wrote. If only Laura had had the good sense to channel one or two of Trump's other TV triumphs and told him, "You know where the lobby is, sir? Down the hall to the left," or simply, "You're fired."
As we know, Republicans love alpha males who stand up to authority and aren't afraid to say what they think. You know, people like Ted Cruz. Okay, sure, Ted did crumble like a little bitch and praise the man who called his wife ugly and his father a murderer, but that was probably a one-off. I mean, yeah, he did blame his daughters when he was caught running off to Cancun while the citizens of his state froze without any power, but any alpha male would hide behind a couple of teenage girls rather than admit they were an ineffectual piece of shit with no real power to help anyone. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. Cruz is a strong, principled guy who knows right from wrong and, thanks to his years as a tough-on-crime prosecutor, knows what terrorists are when he sees them. 18 times since last January, he's described the insurrection that he helped foment as a terrorist attack, and he won't back down from that stance. You know, unless Tucker Carlson tells him to. In which case, he'll backtrack, apologise, claim he messed up and beg for mercy like the snivelling little slimy, shitty-bearded, spineless cuck he is. Because Tucker decides what's true and what isn't, no matter what any judge says about his show.
Well, here in Britain, the virus is over, and Boris has won. Desperate to distract us from yet more revelations about his not following the rules about social gatherings during lockdown and not strictly telling the truth to the independent, though appointed by him, investigator into whether he asked a Tory donor to pay for his wallpaper, Boris has decided to hedge his bets on Omicron, helping him bring about the end of the pandemic. How? Well, he's going to reduce the isolation time after testing positive from 7 days to 5 days. That is, those self-same 5 days that most people are still testing positive during, so they can stop shirking and get back to work to pay for the national insurance tax hike, to pay for the furlough scheme, and the increased heating fuel charges to generate enough VAT to create a windfall large enough for Rishi Sunak to be able to give that to the people suffering from not being able to afford to pay the national insurance tax hike and the increased fuel bills. Also, Boris is doing away with the free lateral flow test, so people won't know whether they are positive, so they won't have to isolate at all. You know, exactly the opposite of that which allowed his government to swiftly plan an albeit non-response to the size of the Omicron outbreak. Ah, dear Dominic Cummings, we so miss your guiding hand on the tiller, steering us away from the ignorant path of herd immunity and letting the bodies pile up. No, we don't. Still, could be worse. Liz Truss could be within shouting distance of the Prime Minister job. Oh, no. Wait.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patrons, Steve Hillier and Colleen Lierla. Our Straw Man level patrons, Kaz Tui, Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki and Amber R. Buchanan. And our True Scotsman level patrons, Andrew Houck, Max Beaver, and our top patron, Lauren. Thanks very much for all your support over the last year. And please continue to do it and spread the word.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.